Good morning, everyone.
I can still say good morning.
Still morning.
It's wonderful, as always, to be back in Promised Land to see some of you. Many of you I know from years gone by, and some of you I'm just getting to know. But at any rate, it's wonderful to be here. And I want to start out this morning by telling you that I grew up in northwestern Pennsylvania. We're still there. I'm back there again after so many years, after living overseas for so many places. But I'm from a small town called Chandler's Valley in Pennsylvania. And Chandler's Valley is a tiny village of about, it was 200 when I was a kid growing up, but it's down to about 100, and it's right up near the Great Lakes, northwestern corner near Erie, Pennsylvania. And growing up was great in Chandler's Valley. But at any rate, when I was a kid, I loved history. You know, and I wasn't nerdy, but I loved history. And my dad liked history, and he got me addicted to it. And then when I was a kid, I liked reading about the Revolution, the American Revolution, and George Washington, and how Washington, General Washington, took on the mightiest army in the world and defeated them with the help of the French at Yorktown. Really great stories. And then I liked reading, my dad liked World War II, and I liked reading about General Patton and the Third Army and how they liberated the boys at the Battle of the Bulge. And great stories. And I also liked ancient history. And I'd read about, you know, Julius Caesar and the Roman legions and how they stormed Gaul or France and conquered all these places. And I just found it fascinating. And I liked ancient history. You know, they now call it prehistoric history. I like prehistoric history. And I read about the dinosaurs and all this stuff, you know. And I had this, when I was a kid, I had a bunch of play sets. You know, my mom and dad would buy stuff off the old Sears catalog. And I had soldiers, you know, toy soldiers. And I had dinosaurs. You know, I had a little dinosaur thing. And it had like a plastic landscape. And it had like a little lake in there. It was about like this. It had a little lake. And it had plastic trees and stuff. And I'd play for hours with that. And I was about 10, 11 years old. And I read, or I might have heard in school, I don't exactly remember, but they would find dinosaur bones in these swampy areas. You know, they got to dig in these swampy areas, and they had these tar pits outside Los Angeles, and they'd find dinosaur bones. And so I got this great idea that maybe if we dug in this little swamp next to my dad's house, my dad's old house, if you went down over the bank, there was a tiny swamp there. It wasn't very big. Still there. And if we dug down far enough, we'd find dinosaur bones. Got this great idea. So I talked to my older friends into helping me. I was like the supervisor. And we went out one hot July day. It gets hot in Pennsylvania in July. And we're out there digging in the swamp. Finally, my mom comes out. My mother came out. She said, "John Peterson, what are you doing?" And I said, "Mom, I said, I read where you find dinosaur bones in some of these ancient, these swampy areas." And she said, "John," she said, you're going to have to dig halfway to China to find these dinosaur bones. Tell those poor kids to go home. They, you know, give them a break. So we did. We did. And that ended our dinosaur digging. But at any rate, the gist of that is, it's amazing to me how people buy into stuff, how you can talk people into stuff, how gullible we are, and we've all been gullible in our lives. How, you know, if it's presented just the right way, whatever foolishness we buy into, you know. It's amazing to me as I get older. The older I get, the more I'm amazed how people, and myself included, fall into this stuff. With that in mind, I'd like you to turn to our first passage today, Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11, I'll begin with verse 1, and I'm going to read Genesis chapter 11. Now, this is a great story. It's, you know, I love this story. There's so much in this story. And it's the Tower of Babel. And many of you know this story probably better than I do. But at any rate, we're going to begin with verse 1 and read about verse 9. And let me begin here, Genesis chapter 11. "Now the whole earth had one language and one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, 'Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly.' They had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, 'Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth.' But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, indeed, the people are one, and they all have one language, and this is what they begin to do. Now, nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore, its name is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. Amen. I find this story absolutely fascinating for a lot of reasons. First of all, I believe, my own personal opinion, I believe this is the devil's first real attempt to take over the world. I mean, this is his first attempt to set up a kingdom, you know, and to bring in a new order, as they're fond of saying. And it's incredible how, you know, he's thought all this through. Now, he's the guy in Isaiah chapter 14 that says, I will be like the Most High. I will be his God. I will sit on the sides of the north. I will sit in the mount of the congregation. It's him. And he's behind this huge venture to build this tower in this city. And the tower is fascinating in itself. But anyway, the devil is behind this. And I believe had they finished this tower, he would have come out of the shadows and declare himself God. I really think that. Now, he had Adam and Eve sinning, and they were sinning so bad, man's hearts were evil continually, his thoughts. And by the time of the flood, you know what happened. They get off. A few generations later, they're right back at it again, and they build this tower. They're starting to build this tower. Now, in the Middle East, they build these. They call them ziggurats, if I pronounce them right, and they're square bases, and they build them up step by step, and they sometimes have this winding walkway up the side of them. And at the top of this thing, they put a temple or a shrine of some kind. But this is man's attempt, devil through man, to claim his own destiny. We will be as gods. We will rule this place. And the ancient Jewish scholars found a lot of interest in this, a lot of symbolism. For example, they built the tower out of brick. And the ancient Jewish scholars believed that brick symbolized uniformity, total conformity. We're all one and one for all. Communist manifesto. And I mean, this is, you know, everybody's identical. No individual behavior is allowed. No individual thinking is allowed. We're all for one in this mad project. And they begin building. And it's fascinating. Babel translates gateway to God. And they were literally going to try to, you know, build to the heavens and declare themselves gods. And the devil himself along with it. And God is so upset by this. Then he comes down and he says, you know, if mankind comes together as one and they had one language and they would be known by one name. Now, this is Revelation 13 stuff. You know, one name, one number. That's where they're headed with this thing. Nothing changes with the devil. And God comes down and he says, you know, if mankind is united together and they and against into some evil project like this, nothing can stop them. I mean, God sees the problem. You know, nothing is going to end well with this thing. So God comes down and confuses the language. But this is it's a fascinating thing how they put all this together. All for one, one for all. When I look at this, I think about this. Here we are today. And strange things are going on today in terms of what we just talked about. When the coronavirus hit, I was in Pennsylvania, of course, my wife and I, in March, and I thought, it's possible. You know, pandemics come through the world every so often. You have a pandemic. And some of them are brutal, and millions of people do die. And I thought, well, yeah. And I remember and Jesus talked about, you know, the end times where there would be famines, pestilence, and earthquake. And pestilence are pandemics. Diseases go all over the world. I thought, well, it's possible. You know, I remember they came to President Trump and they had these computer models. And this one guy named Nigel Ferguson from Britain who worked for the Imperial College had this computer model. And 2 million people were going to die in the United States alone. 2 million. And they had computer models from the University of Washington. And same thing. So they decided they would shut the country down. I mean, shut everything down. Everything gets shut down except just a few Walmart and a few things. Everything gets shut down. And I'm in Pennsylvania. I'm thinking, man, this is weird. This is really weird. However, you know, they're going to shut it down for 2 weeks. That was the initial idea. And then the hospitals, until they could see what the hospitals were going to, how they were going to be hit by this. And they shut everything down. You know, I mean, you couldn't go to work. You couldn't have your small businesses open or large business for that matter. You know, you couldn't have outside activities. You couldn't go to church. And I'm thinking, man, that's really something. Everybody's quarantined to their houses at first. In March, this began. And I'm thinking, man, I mean, I've never seen anything like this. Never seen anything like this. Now, here we are 7 months later. And we're still going through this, and many of the states are still doing this. And I'm thinking, I'm up there. And the first inkling I had that something wasn't quite right, I remember seeing William Bennett. Many of you, some of you might know who William Bennett was, Secretary of Education under President Reagan. And he was also a drug czar. Brilliant guy. And Bennett's on TV in mid-March and saying, you know, this doesn't make sense to me. You have a 98% recovery rate from the disease. 99% if you're 60 and under. And he said, none of this makes sense to me to shut the whole country down. The damage to this country is it's beyond estimation. And I thought, well, yeah. Then it came out that the hospitals were calling everything COVID virus. Some of the hospitals were calling everything COVID virus. I remember you talked about one of your sermons. It was on YouTube. And where I was watching this radio program. And the guy calls into the guy on the radio program and he says, you know, I had a good friend that was killed in a motorcycle accident. And they call that COVID virus a death. And I thought, I mean, none of this is adding up to me. And I'm not the brightest bulb in the box, but none of this adds up to me. And they kept going on with this. And then the hydroxychloroquine controversy. Several years ago, we had a virus, the SARS virus, which was far deadlier than what this one is. And the SARS virus, Dr. Fauci himself, his own research team dug into this, researched it, and decided that hydroxychloroquine was very effective against the first SARS virus that came through several years ago. Extremely effective. I took a form of it, something similar to that, when I was in Africa to fight malaria. And there's no side effects. It's extremely cheap. Been around for 50, 60 years. And they determined that, you know, anyway, the virus now is 78% similar or identical to the first SARS virus. 78%. And yet they've banned hydroxychloroquine. That didn't make sense to me. And then, of course, at the end of July, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, came out and said masks were useless. Masks were useless. They didn't do anything. The CDC said that. And then they determined just a few weeks ago, they let it out. It came out that as little as 6% of the deaths that have been, you know, charged to coronavirus, as little as 6% were actually, they could actually tell it was coronavirus. Most of the vast majority of people had other health conditions. They were 70 and older and had other health conditions. And so, you know, they couldn't determine what actually killed these people, most of the people. And then they said as much as 90% of the people, it was asymptomatic with them. They had the virus so light, it was such a light or a mild contraction that they said they weren't contagious at all. And I thought, I mean, this is all coming out of the CDC. I'm thinking, well, anyway, the one thing, along with that, the one thing that really shocked me was the suspension of the First Amendment. You know, freedom of speech was out the window. If you went on the social media, you know, like Facebook or Twitter, and said what I'm saying, they would take you off this, they would ban you from social media. And it's amazing. And of course, freedom, you know, freedom of assembly out the window. People can't get together. They weren't allowed to get together in many places for several months. It's gradually coming back, but they weren't allowed to gather, you know, for the first time in our history. And freedom of religion. Freedom of religion. I mean, I'm thinking, am I the only one on this planet that is disturbed by this? Freedom of religion. You couldn't get together. You couldn't have a Christian assembly at all, Christian services at all. It was totally banned. For the first time in our history, it was banned. Totally unconstitutional. Totally unconstitutional. But they did that. And in California, if you dared to open your church or open your business, they shut off your water and electricity. In New Jersey, they were having drones keeping track of people who were wearing masks and weren't wearing masks, and if you were social distancing. I'm thinking, there's a church, a Methodist church, down the road from us. If you go this way from my house, about two blocks in this tiny village, you have a Lutheran church. If you go this way, you have a couple blocks, you have a Methodist church. And the Methodist church was inviting us to come. They want us to come, you know. And there's like 10 people in this church anymore. Churches used to be just booming, you know, but now it's down to 10 people. They said, John, you and Glenda, come to our church. See how, you know, and they just allowed them, the Methodist hierarchy allowed them to open up, allowed them. And so we went, and it was very typical. They had, the pews were, you know, roped off. You had to set so many pews from each other. They had the pews divided in half with ropes. So Glenn and I were sitting on one side and somebody else sat on the other side. They wore masks. And they told them they had to take their hymnals out of the church because they couldn't sing. They weren't allowed to sing. And this one woman, who feisty little woman, came up to me, and I was at the post office one day, and she said, John, they're not taking those hymnals out. Over my dead body, they're taking those hymnals out. And I said, amen, 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 amen. And they also, this was the real thing to me, they also had Bibles in this little Methodist church in our town. And the Bibles were put in plastic baggies and weren't allowed to be used because they were afraid of spreading the coronavirus. And I thought, I sit there thinking, what does that tell you? The Bibles are sealed up in plastic bags and they're not allowed to take them out. And I thought, and this is really, I mean, to me, I spoke at a Lutheran church on Flag Day, June 14th, President's birthday. And I spoke there. And I told them some of the things I'm telling you today about, this doesn't add up to me. None of this adds up to me. And I told them that. And I also told them, along with the problem in the cities, the pillaging and burning of the cities, it's almost like we have civil war now. And I said, that doesn't make sense to me. In Portland, Oregon, they were burning Bibles and crosses. In other cities as well. And this is worldwide. In France, they're burning, ancient cathedrals are being burned and pillaged. And in Australia has been under lockdown for 24 cases, 29 cases. The whole country's practically locked down. And it's like something doesn't totally, and I said to them at the Lutheran church, I said, it's like there's somebody inside the country that wants to destroy the country. Or destroy it and rebuild it into something you and I would never recognize. That's what it seemed like to me. And I also went on to say that, and I don't think they took it real well, but I said, I didn't think the church should have ever shut down. They did. They just opened up a few months ago. And I said, the church to me should have never shut down. The church should have been open to be, they have a responsibility to stay open, to provide, you know, hope and the truth to people. Now, if you don't want to attend church because you're afraid of the virus, that's fine, because the virus, it is a serious virus. I'm not saying that it's not. But the churches should have stayed open. They should have, you know, there's only one pastor we know, my wife and I know, who stayed open. He was shut down 2 weeks. He got harassed by pastors in his area about 15 miles from us. It was a little independent Baptist church. He stayed open, but he took a lot of flack. But the churches, I believe, should have stayed open. They should have, you know, it's outrageous to me if churches shut down. Outrageous to me. I mean, God is in the heavens. God can't protect you. God can't, you know. And what I told him was, it sets a terrible precedent. Because once you start closing, the next crisis, and these governors and mayors have the right to shut your church down, they have no right over the church. The state has no right to shut the church down under any circumstances, in my estimation. Any. It's up to the church to shut. You know, separation of church and state and what the founding fathers, how they saw it, not the way they see it now. I also told them, I am praying for a revival in America. A revival. I mean, a real revival. And I said to them, you know, that we need a revival in the church. We need a revival desperately. And I think with this, with the thought of revival, I think there are basically two reasons, in my estimation, basically two, of why this is happening. I believe this. I believe it's happening because obviously God wants America to return to him. He wants America to wake up, to come to him. You know, Jonathan Cahn did a brilliant job in his first book on The Harbinger, how he compared ancient Israel to America and how ancient Israel drifted and drifted and would not listen. And finally, they ended up in captivity. Captivity. So I'm praying for revival every day. I've been doing this for several years. And you can't have 60 million babies dead and expect to be blessed by God. It does not happen that way. Not in my Bible. You can't have selling baby parts with Planned Parenthood and expect to be blessed by God. It does not happen that way. You know, I heard this underground or this hidden mic interview with this woman who worked for Planned Parenthood. And she was bragging if they sold a few more baby parts, she could buy a new Lamborghini sports car. I've seen Lamborghini. I saw them in London when I lived there in England. And they were in these big showrooms. I mean, they're like $200,000-$300,000. Unbelievable. And this woman's bragging about it. What is wrong up here? What is wrong? Are we that callous? And it's still going on. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. The Nazis didn't even think of that. And the, you know, and then you have, the, you know, America exports more pornography than any nation in the world right now. And then you have this sex education in schools. What is wrong with us? It's not sex education to kindergartners. It's total depravity. It's ridiculous. It's crazy. And we still, you know, we're putting up with it, putting up with it, putting up with it. But I'm praying for a revival in the nation. I'm also praying, and I believe there's another reason why God has allowed this to happen, is revival in the church. The church has to come back to him. As we were talking about this morning, I know I've worked with some of these churches, Protestant churches. I'm not a part of it. I'm a Sabbath keeper, but I've worked with them. They asked me to speak, and I'll fill in for them. And I keep shoving the envelope every time I do, pushing the envelope. But the church's progressivism and liberal theology have swept into the mainline churches. I can name them for you. I know them. I've read their periodicals. I've gone to their websites. I preached in some of their churches. Amazing. Lutheran Church, any of these churches, Methodists, their hierarchies have totally gone over the edge. They're questioning the Bible. How could the, and some of the books they're handing out to be taught in their adult classes. I've seen them. I got rid of it. When they asked me to teach their class, I got rid of it, threw it out. But they question the Bible's authenticity. Well, the Bible has been translated so many times through so many people down through the ages. Who could possibly believe this? And yet, the Bible, they have manuscripts of the ancient Isaiah. And the manuscripts of ancient Isaiah match almost perfectly with so many of our translations today. And the Holy Spirit's in charge of that. Hello? And it's on and on and on. And then now they're questioning the miracles of Jesus. How could a man walk on water? It's scientifically, you know, physically impossible. God made the water. It's not hard for him. Or how can you know, parting the Red Sea, they must have been walking through a swamp. That much water. It's impossible. Not with my God. It's amazing, you know? And they've all become very anti-Israel. You go to their websites, they're very anti-Israel. And I remember what God told Abraham, those who bless you are blessed, those who curse you are cursed. And they're not listening. They're not listening. I mean, it's just one crazy thing after another. And then they've gotten to the point now where they even question the crucifixion. And I read their periodicals. I've read it. It's in there. They said, well, man must be basically good, not fallen, like the Bible tells us, a sinful nature. And therefore, why would a loving God allow his son to die such an ignominious death on a cross, a cruel death on a cross? I mean, it's the whole purpose. They're jerking out the whole purpose for us to be here, to worship God. You know, or how could a loving God put people in a lake of fire at the end of all this? God is a God of love. But as we mentioned this morning, God is a God of justice. At some point, God will deal with, you know, with justice, render justice unto us all. But the church has wandered. I mean, Paul said there'd be a falling away of the faith before Jesus comes. A falling, and there's a serious, and I'm not exaggerating with these mainline churches. They are totally over the edge. Totally over the edge. It's amazing how, you know, what's going on there. When I see all this, I'm of two minds. Two minds. The first mind is I love the country, love America. I didn't realize it until I went overseas and I was working on military bases overseas for 7 years and went all over the world. And I realized how good America is. And when we went to Africa, I realized how good America is. Get me out of here, Scotty. Beam me up, Scotty. But the third world country, it's not easy to live there. It's tough. It's really tough. But America, I love America. And I'd like to see America turn around and get out of this thing and turn back to its Judeo-Christian principles, back to where it belongs, you know. But I also, as being a student of prophecy, I also see that maybe the blessed hope that people have been waiting for thousands of years is getting close. I can't help it. Next April, I have been studying prophecy for 40 years. 40 years. I can't believe it. Off and on, sometimes intensely, sometimes, but God keeps bringing me back to it. And I can't see anything missing. I told them in the Lutheran Church in Ahia, I have no understanding of the prophets. No one. I mean, I tried to push the envelope when I was preaching there, but I see nothing missing. All the players are on the stage to finish this thing. Now, I'm not saying tomorrow or next, you know, I think some things have to transpire in Revelation before Christ comes, but I mean, we're close. We're very close. And as Charlie said this morning, the final events will be rapid ones. You know, I remember the Adventists used to say that we knew it was coming, but we didn't think it was coming this fast. And things are really happening quickly. For example, to kind of go back to where I started, we know for a fact that last fall, all of the movers and shakers of the world had a conference. It was called Event 201. You can find it on the internet. And they all came together. You know, George Soros, Bill Gates, the World Economic Forum, the big tech companies, you know, representatives of the Vatican, all the big nations except for Trump's administration, they all came together. And they had this event 201. And they war gamed what would happen if we had a pandemic. What would be the effects of a pandemic? This is last fall. And they also war gamed what policies could we implement in the world if there was a pandemic. What policies can we get through? Now, these people firmly believe in global warming environmental, you know. But it's not what you think. It's not what they don't necessarily buy into this, we're going to save the world and we got to lower the carbon and all that. They're just looking at it for power. They want to set up an agency over the entire world and you can control the energy input and output of every nation. Every nation. That's what they're really into, the power of it, the control of it. It's all about control. And they want to get rid of the nation states, want to get rid of all countries and divide it up into sections. It's interesting how Revelation has 10 sections or 10 kings at the end. I really believe that's where they're headed with this thing. But they want to get rid of the city states. They want to redistribute wealth according to how they think certain people should get money. They control all the money. They want to have, like Michelle Obama used to say, a fundamental transformation of America, of the world, not just America, the entire world. They want to fundamentally transform education, society, economies. Everything gets changed. Now, they're calling this thing the Great Reset. And they're looking at January, possibly January, as a possible time to accelerate everything. In other words, they would not restart the economies, but reset everything. Everything gets reset. Everything is going to be totally changed. And, of course, they have the power. Now, interestingly enough, at the same time this has been, and then, of course, a few months later, they had the pandemic. Coincidence? I don't know. But a few months later, the pandemic turned up after they had this conference. Interesting. But at the same time as all this is going on, there's other things going on. The Secretary General of the United Nations, this guy named Guterres, he's going around the world saying that the world has to come together. This is their golden opportunity. No nation can possibly deal with a pandemic or deal with our global warming. We have to come together and form a world governance, as they like to say, a world government. And right now he's saying that. And the head of the World Health Organization, the African, he's there on saying the same thing. So they're all pushing. This is their opportunity to bring in a world government, whatever you want us to call it. The Tower of Babel, the final version of the Tower of Babel. I believe that's what this is. But at any rate, they're all pushing this thing. Now, there were two flies in the ointment to this thing. Two flies in the ointment that really rattled these people. And they're rattled. I think that's why they've accelerated this thing this year. The first was the election of Donald Trump. Whether you like him or don't like him personally, he comes in and he's like a bull in a china shop and says, America first, America first, America first. You know, and he gets up in the UN and he says, America will never be a socialist nation in all of his rallies. And that's not what these people want to hear. These people are socialists. They want to set up a world socialist government. That's what they're pushing. They're openly telling you this now. And Trump was the fly in the ointment. And I don't know how the man is still in the way. I don't know. I mean, he's got to have God protecting him. And because these are movers and shakers. These are people, the deep state is a part of this thing. But it's worldwide. And then the other fly in the ointment was Brexit, which caught him off guard. I lived in England in 91, 92, lived in England. And that's when the British people were being pushed into this European Union. Now, the European Union is really a precursor to the New World Order. It's all about control. And the British people knew if they became, now they're socialist to some extent, but not like this. And they knew if they became part of the European Union, they would lose control of their sovereignty. They would no longer be a real sovereign nation. Control of their borders, control of their currency, control of their culture. And so they were fighting it. And the government refused to put it up for a vote. When I left England, a couple years after I left, they rammed it through. The politicians did. I think it was John Majors who was prime minister then. Rammed it through. And the British people were stuck. About 3 years ago, they had a vote. They finally put it up for a vote in England. And the British people said, we want out of this thing. We're tired of this. They've been totally overrun. Britain will never be the same again. Britain is completely gone, just about completely gone, culturally as well as, and they openly admit it. So at any rate, they voted, and 3 years later, they're still dragging their feet. The European Union said, you sign these agreements. You have to fulfill some of these agreements, you know. And so they're battling. But those are the two things that I think enrage these people, the movers and shakers, whoever they are. And so at any rate, that's where we are right now. I believe it's really, really close. Now, I wanna finish up, and I'm going to try this again. I believe at some point, either during Trump's administration or post-Trump's administration, they're going to get what they want. Revelation tells us that. That they're heading towards that. Now, I want you to turn, and I'm going to try to make this brief and make it as simple as I can, to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7. And beginning with verse 1, we're going to read like maybe in the first 7 verses, and I'll make it brief. I'm going to try to bring this together. This is what I'm seeing is coming. I think, my personal opinion. Okay, Daniel chapter 7, beginning with verse 1. And just let me get through this, and we'll try to make it as simple as possible. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a vision and a dream and a vision of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. Verse 2, Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up on the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. The first was like a lion, had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And suddenly another beast, a second like a bear. It was raised up on one side and had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. After this I looked, and there was another like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird. The beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. After this, verse 7, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns. And in verse 8, we have the little horn, the Antichrist. Now, let me make this as clear as I can. Daniel, if you read chapter 12, verse 4, Daniel tells you this book was written for the end. Now, you can say it's all in the past with Babylon and ancient Rome and ancient Greece. That's fine. But really, it says this book will not be understood until the time of the end. Now, this is what I'm seeing here. This is my personal opinion, what I'm seeing. But a lot of people have come to the same conclusion. Daniel sees a vision, and he sees four winds striving upon the great sea. Now, the four winds, if you read Revelation chapter 7, are released at the end of time. That's, and I believe gradually, but it's released at the end. It's for the four winds of strife upon this prodigal planet that has totally gone crazy, left God, you know, for the most part. He sees the four winds. Now, sea are people. In Revelation 17, it tells you it's symbolic of people. So what he's seeing is the world is in turmoil. He sees the winds of strife are blowing and all these people on the earth. It's like now, there's all this chaos. Now, as he watches this, four beasts start coming up. And the first, and they're always symbolic of nations or kingdoms. The first is like a lion. It has eagle's wings. And it's, you know, it's king of the air, king of the land, king, superpower at the end. And he says, I watched that superpower, and suddenly those wings were plucked. And the lion's, brave lion's, courageous lion's heart was taken from it, and a man's heart's given to it. In other words, there's a humbling of this power. Now, I believe it's America. I'm convinced of it. If this thing is mentioned four times in Daniel about this humbling of this superpower, four times, I can show you. And I believe, you know, we have eagle's wings on the presidential seal. I believe that at some point, America does go too far from God, away from God. And maybe, like I said, during, after Trump, whatever it is. It's like we aren't learning the lesson. Many people in the country are, but there's many people that aren't. And so suddenly America goes into a rapid decline, a humbling, you know, the wings are plucked. And I believe if you read Daniel 8, I believe it's a war in the Middle East with the Iranians or whatever that tips us over the edge, but whatever. It goes into a decline. Now, as it goes into a decline, a bear comes up and he's looking to arise, devour much flesh, dominion. Now the bear, who could possibly be a bear at the end of time? It's always been Russia. And Vladimir Putin has been waiting in the wings for us to step on a banana peel. I believe it's the Russians. I believe it's as plain can be. Now, the third beast is a leopard with four wings and four heads. Now, the four wings indicate it's moving. Many of the commentaries say it's moving quickly upon the earth, you know, quickly. And it has four heads. And the only thing that makes sense to me, you're looking for power blocks at the end. You have the U.S., you have Russia. And when I was in, I don't know if it was after in college, and later on, we always referred to the four tigers of Asia. You know, you had South Korea, you had Japan, you had China, and you had India. And it may be interchangeable at the end. That's what I'm saying. We took South Korea, and after the Korean War, built it into an economic superpower. And it has nuclear weapons. I mean, a superpower. Took Japan after the Second World War with MacArthur there, rebuilt it into a superpower. Their car companies practically put us out of business. You know, economic super, Japan, Korea, and yet India. How many thousands of jobs are now outsourced to India? India has nuclear weapons. Power. I mean, these people aren't third world anymore. Not really. And then you have China. And now I heard just a couple days ago the Chinese has the biggest navy in the world as of right now. And I don't know if that's true or not. I've heard that. Heard that on the news. But at any rate, China. Now, I remember in the 1990s, whole factories were being shipped to China. I mean, Trump's right. When he says we had these idiotic trade treaties, he's right. He's exactly right. It was insanity what we did with our trade, the presidents. You know, we shipped all of our industrial might to Asia. But they were taking whole factories to China. And China now rivals us in every estimation. So that's what I'm seeing. The four tigers of Asia are on a block. Now the fourth beast is dreadful and terrible. That's, I think, your new world order. That's the Tower of Babel finally coming together. I believe It may be in the war in the Middle East that sets off this thing, but it'll be the markets will be rattled. Remember, Paul says peace and safety in the end. When you hear that, run for the hills. And a better translation is peace and prosperity. Peace and prosperity. I think money is going to have a lot to do with these end time events. Money, big time. Markets rattled. Now, I want you to turn. I'm going to show you the final version. Turn to Revelation chapter 13, just verses 1 and 2. Revelation chapter 13, verses 1 and 2. Very simple. Final version. Now, Revelation chapter 13, 1 and 2, John has the same vision as Daniel over only about 600 years later. Has the same vision Daniel just had, I just read to you. Only he's not seeing the first three, the lion and the bear and the four-headed leopard. He's seeing them all together. They finally come together. Now look at this. Verse 1. John says this, "Then I stood on the sand of the sea," see, people, "and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name." Verse 2, "Now the beast I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear. His mouth was like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his authority, his power, throne, and great authority." Here is the final version. It all comes together. It's not a person. It's the beast. It's this new world order. It has the feet of a bear, the Russians. Has the body of a leopard, the four powers of Asia. I'm just suggesting this is what I see. And it has the mouth of a lion. Now notice the mouth is not the power anymore. It's in the bear and it's in the four-headed leopard. And that's, you know, after the lion goes into this steep decline. That's what I'm seeing. That's what I'm seeing. All of this comes together in the end at some point. God has predicted it. Now, I want to finish on a good note. I'm going to keep you much longer. I'm going to finish on a good note. How does God respond to this? God is sovereign over all nations. God has power, and God is in control. I want you to turn to one thing, and Charlie keeps mentioning it. Pastor Charlie keeps. I want you to turn to Joel chapter 2. And you know this, and I'm just going to read a few verses. Just Joel chapter 2, beginning with verse 28. Joel chapter 2, beginning with verse 28. Now, I know I'm throwing a lot of stuff at you, but I am not here very often, and I've got to clear my conscience. So I'm going to clear my conscience. Joel chapter 28, chapter 2, verses 28. Let me begin reading. "And it shall come to pass afterward that I will pour out my spirit on all flesh." Charlie's mentioned that. "Your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, your old men shall dream dreams, your young men shall see visions. And also on my men servants and on my maid servants, I will pour out my spirit in those days. And I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire." And did you ever think about pillars of smoke? In some translations, it says it's smoke like palm trees. Interesting, interesting. Pillars of smoke. "And the sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the coming of the great and terrible day of the Lord. And it shall come to pass that whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved." I'm going to stop there. I believe this is part of it. When you read this, and in the Lutheran church, they were always reading. Every year they had Pentecost Sunday, you know. And I'd be there occasionally to speak or something. And I always turned it back to what I'm turning it back now. When that first God poured out his spirit that first time on the 120 in the upper room. Remember, Peter and all the disciples are up there and it pours out on them. And they go out and they turn the world upside down. They preach and they teach and they heal and all these wonderful things happen. Thousands come to Christ in a day. Turn the world upside down. Book of Acts is written. Now here it happens again. My dad in Chandler's Valley had a garden. And talks about it in the book of James, talks about the same thing. The early rains would come when he planted his crops in May. My dad would plant. We had to plant late, was in May. Plant his garden. Now, the latter rain would come and water the crops at the end in August and get them ready for harvest. You know, you had to have an early rain and a latter rain. This, I believe, is the latter rain. God is going to pour out his spirit on all flesh. All flesh. Not just a few. An upper room. Everybody gets, you know, the Holy. Now, as you were saying, as he was saying, Pastor Charlie, you can either reject it or you can accept it, but it'll be poured out. Now, what does the Spirit do? The Spirit leads you into all truth and tells you of things to come. I don't care what your mental capacity is. When this happens, I believe everybody will be able to make a decision. I never believed, being a missionary 5.5 years and Glennon was 7 years, I never believed the missionaries would totally finish the work. I think God is going to do it supernaturally through us, many of us, but he'll pour out his spirit. And that's when you see people, ordinary people like any one of you here today, any one of you, all of you, suddenly turn into Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's. You turn into Queen Esther's. You turn into Daniel's. For a time such as this, you have been called. And you say, John, I can't stand up. I have to wear my mask. I'm terrified. And this is where God fills you with his spirit. And he lights up the world with his spirit. And we ain't seen nothing yet. It's amazing what's going to happen. And that's when you hear people say, I pledge my life, my fortune, my sacred honor. You know, no fear. God will take care of those things. God will pour out his spirit. And we're going to see things, like I said, you never will believe. And you'll be doing and saying things you never would believe. Never would believe. You know, when I went to Africa, I came back. And I had some friends that knew me before I went to Africa, well, years ago, back in the 70s. And they said, and Glenn, they were talking to Glenn, and they said, so what did you and John do? What have you been doing? She said, well, we're missionaries in Africa. And they said, John? Missionary? Africa? John? I mean, but that's what will happen. You'll be out there. I don't know what God's going to do with you, but he will do a miraculous thing. Now, the other thing is, and just very briefly, God will send two witnesses. I believe this is going to happen. I believe in Revelation 11, he's talking about, where the one witness profits, one turns water into blood. Moses did that and during the plagues in Egypt. And one can shut water off or rain from falling for 3.5 years, as it talks about in James, and that's Elijah. And I believe he'll send these two prophets back to Jerusalem. Where do they always go? To the temple. And there'll be a third temple. The devil will set himself down. He wants to be in there. Paul talks about it in 2 Thessalonians. And the two witnesses will prophesy. And they'll be martyred just like they always have been. And I believe that's the final straw with God. But anyway, I didn't get too far out in the weeds. But at any rate, I believe that's what's happening. Now, I'd like to finish this with one last story. I beg you to indulge me for one last story. And I've told this story before, but I think many of you probably haven't heard it, so I'll tell it again. Talking of riots and courage and all this stuff, Glenn and I were missionaries, as I said, in Tanzania, which is next to Kenya in East Africa. We were missionaries. And I was there, like I said, 5.5 years. She was there 7 years. I met her there. We got married. But anyway, we were there in the year 2010. We came home in 2011. And we were there in 2010. And there was a presidential election on in Tanzania. And it was in November on the first Tuesday, just like us. And a guy by the name of Kikwete, who was a Muslim, was running for president. And it's corrupt over there. I mean, you know, so everybody assumed Kikwete's going to win. Win hands down. I mean, and we lived in the city of Wanza, which is loosely termed a city, of about 3 million people. And Glenn and I lived up in the hills outside of the city in a place called Isimilo, in a region called Isimilo, where some of the missionaries lived. And any rate, the election day came. And it was on that Tuesday, and we weren't traveling that day. We were home. And I remember we heard this pop, pop, pop going on down. You know, we came out of our house. We could hear it down into the city. And I said to Glenn, I said, well, Kikwete has won. He's won another election. You know, he's won the area or the region of Wanza, that whole city and the whole area around it. And about that time, we got this phone call. And it was Pastor Frank. He's Rwandan. He was our translator. He went on the road with us a lot. Great guy. We're still helping him with his ministry over there. And Frank says, don't leave your house. He said, the opposition party thinks they won their area of Wanza. They think that, you know, and they think they won. Kikwete lost by some strange thing, but they won't release the election results. And they wouldn't release the election results, so people start rioting. The opposition party started rioting in there, just like Portland, you know, and they're trying to turn over cars, smashing windows, trying to burn buildings, the whole nine yards. He says, don't leave your house. So I said, oh, yeah. And then the American embassy contacted us And they said the same thing in an email. So anyway, the pop, pop, pop I heard was not firecrackers. I thought it was firecrackers. They're celebrating. It was tear gas. And the cops finally came out, shot off the tear gas, and the rioters go up into the hills. They leave the city and go up into the hills, right where we are. They go right up into Isamillo, where we are. And we had a house up there, and we had a fence around it, and we had iron gates. And they come up. And right in front of our house, there was this footpath. And it was, you know, a sandy footpath that went up this hill. And about 40 yards up the hill was this house. And we never realized it. I mean, it was in Swahili. We walked by it, even though she reads and speaks. We walked by it. It was the political campaign headquarters for Kikwete. And when the opposition party came up out of the city, they're mad. And they see this house that was the campaign headquarters right up from our gate. And they start rioting, and they're throwing stuff and rocks, and they're, you know, shouting and going after this. And nobody was in the house. And I thought, boy, if they come down that footpath, you know, we've had it. You know, all I had to defend this was I had a club that the Maasai warriors would carry when they went into the jungles or into the plains. And some missionaries had guns, but it was hard to get a gun there because it's a socialist country. It was almost impossible to get a license. So at any rate, I had that club. But anyway, we were in the living room. I went into the bedroom. And I start praying. And I said, God, please. I said, they're out there. And then, you know, they come through that gate. I mean, Glenn is my main concern. It's like John Wayne at the Alamo. They come through the gate, you know. So I was praying. And I thought of Psalm 91. And in Psalm 91, it says, he shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life, I'll satisfy him and show him my salvation. I kept saying that. And so I went back into the living room. And they're still out there. I mean, it's a bigger crowd than ever, and they're hollering, and they're beating, and all this stuff, and, you know. And so I went back into the bedroom, and I prayed again. I said, God, you said you'll deliver us. And so I went back into the living room about a minute or so later, and all of a sudden I began hearing these big drops of rain falling on our steel roof. I mean, it was, you know, and pretty soon it was coming down in buckets. I mean, it's just in buckets. It's just pouring. And about 10 minutes after that started, it stopped. And I looked out, and all the rioters were gone. All of them were gone. I thought, wow, this is really cool. So the next day, we walked into Wanza, walked down up that footpath and down. And it was about a mile into the city from where we lived. And we had a good friend. He had a card shop. He was an Indian. The Brits brought a lot of Indians into East Africa and they ran some of the businesses and stuff. And so he was an Indian, and we went into his card shop, and Glenn was going to get a card to send back for somebody's birthday. I went in there and I said, boy, it must have been really crazy here. He had a business and he had iron gates he would shut at night. And I said, boy, it must have been really crazy here yesterday. He said, oh, Mr. Peterson, very bad, very bad, very bad, very bad. And I said, they're overturning cars and they were smashing windows and they were doing all kinds of things. Very bad, very bad. And I said, it's a good thing it rained to cool things off. He looked at me and says, Mr. Peterson, it didn't rain in Wanza. And I said, it must have. He said, no, it didn't rain in Wanza. And I said, well, we live up in Isamillo in the hills. And I said, it rained up there. He said, oh, no. I have friends in Isamillo. Didn't rain in Isamillo either. And come to find out, the only place that rained was over top of our house and out in front of our gate. See, God has power. God can deliver you from anything. And to finish up, remember some of the verses, like Paul says, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. And David says, if God be with you, who can be against you? You know, and as God told Joshua, when into the promised land, be strong and courageous. Don't be fearful, upset, or discouraged. For I, the Lord your God, am with you wherever you go. I'm with you wherever you go. And as Daniel writes, God is sovereign over all nations. He raises kings up and takes kings down, and nothing can stop his purposes from being fulfilled. So God has power. I want to leave you on a good note. God has power. And through God, you have power. You have power through the Holy Spirit. And remember, for a time such as this, you have been called. All of you. Amen. Not a pastor, not just everybody has been called. And God will do miraculous things. incredible things. Amen. Amen.